What's good? What's good? C Wood back at you again with another hard hitting, jam packed episode of Ball About the South with C Wood. Ball About the South, it is that sports podcast where we talk real sports and we do it with real Southern flavor. Again, my name is Kerry Wood, but just call me C Wood for short. C Wood on sports on Twitter and IG. That's where you can find me. Would love for you to come by and chop it up with me a little bit at your leisure. I always talk a little sports on Twitter and of course on Instagram when I possibly can. Mostly on Twitter, I must say, but definitely like both of those platforms, I think, the best. And, you know, also kind of do a little Facebook as well, but mainly catch me on Twitter and let's chat some sports here from time to time. I love the interaction from, especially if you like to listen to the show, man. I definitely want to interact with people that listen to the show and get feedback and things of that nature. Again, I just really appreciate you joining me and listening to this show one more time. This is the 24th episode. Getting on up there, man. 24th episode of Ball About the South. And, you know, again, I'm just really happy to, you know, the show is kind of moving on at a pretty decent pace and everything. I do want to shout out a couple dudes, man, that I kind of know on Twitter and on social media. The Drop Balls podcast, his name is Chris Lewis. He is the host of that show. If you haven't listened to it, you definitely need to check it out. I say especially if you're an NBA fan. NBA. He does a lot of NBA, but I think he is definitely specialized in the NFL and in boxing. If you're one of a fan of boxing especially and the NFL, he knows his stuff backwards and forwards. There's no question about that. And he hit his 100th episode. Again, that's the name of his podcast, is Drop Balls Pod. And I just wanted to, you know, congratulate on him on that. I think he hit that milestone last week or the week before. I'm not really sure. But I thought that was really cool. And then the other dude is Mike Patton, man. I've mentioned both of these guys on the show before. But Mike Patton, he is the host of Touring the AFC South. And it's just like what it sounds. I mean, if you're a fan of any of the AFC South teams especially, you definitely need to check his show out. He has a lot of great guests that obviously talk a lot of AFC South news and notes and everything. But he also touches on other topics as well. And he does a really great job with it. He hit his 50th episode last week or the week before last, one of those two. So I want to congratulate those two guys if they hit those milestones since I've joined you last. And again, I definitely like listening to both of their shows, and I think that you will too. Anyway, I want to move on, and a lot to get to on the show today. We got, obviously, the Final Four has gone down in New Orleans. We're going to talk about all of that, the Final Four and the championship game. Really good weekend, really interesting weekend, to say the least, as Coach K ended up coaching his final game. And that's kind of part of the reason I'm calling this podcast Full Circle. There are a couple of reasons I'm calling it Full Circle, because if you go back and look at one major stat that I heard Saturday night when North Carolina beat Duke, Coach K's first game as a head coach at Duke was a victory over, I think it was Stetson, if I remember him saying it, Jim Nance saying it correctly. If I remember it correctly, it was Duke beat Stetson in Coach K's first ever coaching game with Duke. The very next game, which of course was the second game of that season, they lost to North Carolina. So the first loss for Coach K in his coaching career was against the North Carolina Tar Heels, which is crazy. When you sit there and think about the last loss, really, well, it would have been, obviously not the last two losses, because they lost to Virginia Tech, I think it was, in the ACC tournament. But the last loss, anyway, is to North Carolina. I mean, is that insane or what? So it's kind of just come full circle as successful as Coach K has been, as legendary a coach as he is and had the huge legacy that he has, all of that going on for this dude, and the first and the last losses of his career were to his main rival. I mean, that is insane. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, I probably have to, sit here and use Alabama as a reference. And I don't know if I could even use Nick Saban, because obviously Nick Saban coached at LSU, coached at Michigan State before he came to Tuscaloosa. Well, Bear Bryant coached a couple of other different places as well, but Bear Bryant is really, I mean, I don't know if you sat there and asked a lot of people that were not alive at that back then and didn't really or haven't really followed Alabama football or the history of Alabama football kind of like I have, they would not, they probably wouldn't know that Bear Bryant coached at another school. In fact, he coached at two other schools before he came to Alabama, but that would almost be like Bear Bryant losing to Auburn in his first coaching game and then losing to Auburn in his last coaching game. I mean, it's just crazy to even sit there and think about that. It was already crazy enough that we had that matchup in the Final Four when both of those teams had never matched up before in the NCAA tournament. And the timing was just crazy. And then, of course, you sit there and you get a pretty much a classic behind it. I mean, the game turns out to be a classic, 81-77. The Tar Heels win it. That's crazy, man. So I just thought, I thought that was kind of full circle. I mean, it's full circle. He lost his first game to North Carolina, and he lost his last game to the Tar Heels. Really kind of full circle. I think it kind of applies to some of, Dawn Staley as well, and Dawn Staley and the South Carolina Gamecocks. Not exactly the same thing, but Dawn Staley is pretty much, I mean, in my view, it's kind of gone full circle for her. She's done just about everything you can do as a college basketball player, especially as a women's college basketball player. If you know Dawn Staley, you probably know her more for her play in the before she became a coach, of course. You probably know her more for her play in the Olympics. I think that's probably what stands out a little bit more than anything else. So now she's won national championship a couple times and everything. She obviously has the gold medals for winning winning in the Olympics and everything. She reached three Final Fours with Virginia. She's gone full circle. I mean, she just really has, in a sense, in a way, in my opinion, when you sit there and you look at it like that. And she's obviously played in the WNBA as well. She's the highest paid coach in college basketball as a woman. Really impressive stuff to be honest with you. And now she has won her second national championship. And I want to say congrats to her and the South Carolina Gamecocks on a fantastic job done here in the NCAA tournament. And I think, man, losing that championship game in the SEC tournament to Kentucky kind of brought this, kind of got this team focused again. Not to say that they weren't necessarily focused or whatever already, but I think this really put things even more into perspective for that basketball team. And, of course, this girl, Leah Boston, she is the player of the year in the nation. She just, had herself a big-time tournament. Did not score as much on Sunday night in the championship game versus UConn, but she had 11 points. But she had 15 rebounds. I mean, 15 huge rebounds, and that was the story of the game. UConn could not keep the Gamecocks off the boards. They could not – the Huskies could not block a Gamecock to save their soul, especially early in that game. South Carolina raced out to, 30-12 lead, 30-10 lead or something like that. UConn got close a couple of times, but I think they were never able to cut it any closer than 6 points. And, man, kind of a dominating performance when you kind of sit there and look at it. Really fantastic job by Don Staley, Aaliyah, Boston, and all of those Gamecocks. They really had a fantastic season, only losing 2 games all year. And they kind of breezed through this tournament field and win both games in the Final Four there in Minnesota by double digits. I mean, that is winning a championship emphatically. When you go down there and you win both games by double digits, that is showing your dominance. There's no question about that. So they win their second national title after really letting one slip away last year, and they kind of Aaliyah Boston and some of the other players really alluded to it many times that they were running it back. You know, they were humbled by losing the national championship last season. And I remember Aaliyah Boston crying big time after that game. And I think they all vowed that they were going to come back and they were on a mission to make sure that they completed that mission this season. And they did just that, with a huge win over UConn. I'll tell you, I got a little bit scared a couple times, even though I knew South Carolina was the better team. And obviously South Carolina really dominated the majority of that game. But, you know, you just have to wonder, man, do the basketball gods have one more left for Geno Auriemma and UConn? I mean, you just kind of had, at least I got that thought. But it was not to be. UConn played really well. I thought UConn was probably going to beat Stanford the other night, and they did. And that was, you're talking about a legendary matchup in that one. You talk about Tara Vanderveer and the Stanford Cardinal playing against UConn and Geno Auriemma. I mean, Tara Vanderveer has 3 national titles of her own, and it's still going strong. And you know, this legendary Final Four right there, and really 2 legendary Final Fours when you really look at it. Again, I just want to congratulate the South Carolina Gamecocks on a job well done. Anyway, man, we're going to obviously get into the national championship game a little bit more on the men's side. We'll talk about a little about that a little bit later in the show. We're going to get into the SEC, of course. We got a lot of, we got several moves going on within the transfer portal and everything as far as the basketball teams are concerned. We have a couple of players that have declared for the NBA draft. We'll talk about that. You know, some of those things are going on, of course, right now with the season coming to an end a week or two ago, depending on which team it is. We'll talk some spring football. Alabama had their first scrimmage over the weekend. I've got a sound bite or two from Nick Saban. We'll kind of get into that a little bit and, kind of get into his mind on what he's seeing and what he's thinking so far of the Alabama Crimson Tide coming up here in 2022. We'll talk a little bit of Auburn. We'll talk a little, you know, a couple of other schools as well, a little Georgia, LSU, or whatever. A lot of quarterback races going on in the SEC with the spring practice going on right now. So we'll get into all of that. And then, of course, we got to get into the NFL. I mean, all of these moves, we really have not gone over. Really haven't gone over them, to be honest, and there have been a lot of them. There have been several that have included teams here from the AFC, NFC South. Of course, the Miami Dolphins made a huge trade. They made some other moves to help out Tua Tagovailoa, which I think is much needed. We'll see how that goes. We'll talk about that for a few minutes, and then we'll talk a little bit of NBA as well as we kind of close out the show. Or whatever, if we get closer and closer to the play-in tournament and, of course, to the playoffs. It's just right around the corner. So anyway, but before I do all of that, before I go to my first break, I want to get into what everybody's talking about. And we're a week out from it now. I mean, we're a good week out from it, but I do want to put my 2 cents in, or maybe my 1 cent, into the Chris Rock, Will Smith thing that happened at the Oscars on last Sunday. I kind of want to discuss that. I think obviously everyone has their own opinion of what happened. And I kind of want to throw my opinion out there as well. Just take a few minutes to do that. I really hated to see it on both ends of the spectrum because I like both of those dudes. I like both of those brothers. I've always been huge Will Smith fan before we even knew him to be Will Smith when he was just a Fresh Prince, and that was before there was even a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I mean, I'm talking about going back to some of his music with DJ Jazzy Jeff, his first couple of tapes I owned. Matter of fact, I probably still have the first two or three tapes. I have a case where I have a lot of my old tapes from back in the day when I was in elementary school and middle school and high school and everything. I still have a lot of them. They were tapes. And again, I know a lot of people may be listening to this show like, what in the hell is a tape? A cassette tape. What is that? Okay, I'm sure that's probably going through the heads of a lot of people. I have some CDs, so there may be some people listening to the show that don't know what a CD is. I don't know, but the cassette tapes I had, so it, you know, long time ago to say the least, and then that goes, like I said, before we knew about a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or anything like that, before I even knew that his name was Will Smith, before he got jiggy with it. So, I mean, we're talking about way back that I've been a fan of Will Smith, and it's almost as long that I've been a fan of Chris Rock as well. So I like both of these brothers, and I hate to see this whole thing go down. Obviously, Will Smith was wrong. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, I think some of the ridicule that he's getting to me is a little bit overblown a little bit. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, I don't know if him ever really getting into any big trouble, any hot water with anyone or whatever. The biggest thing that we've ever seen is this whole mess between he and his wife, Jada Pinkett Smith. You know, and that's kind of, I think, where all of this started. This thing did not start last Sunday at the Oscars with Chris Rock. Chris Rock's joke about Jada Smith's hair or her hairstyle or being bald or whatever. It didn't start there. I mean, this whole thing has been brewing inside Will Smith, and he's had to listen to the chatter about his relationship with Jada, about his marriage and everything, about the infidelity, about this whole thing with Jada and Augusta Alsina. I mean, again, that's not giving him an excuse to do what he did. But I mean, when you sit there and you kind of think about it, man, I can kind of understand why, you know, how he blew up at that joke. Yeah, I understand. He sat there and smiled at it at first. He kind of laughed it off at first, but then he saw Jada was not happy. Jada was not laughing. And then he kind of snapped. He did. And now it's come out that he is resigned from the Academy. I'm still not 100% sure exactly what that means. I'm not sure if he just can't participate at all ever again. If he'll never be nominated with any of his movies or whatever again, I'm not really sure how all of that works. But it's just sad to see, man, especially on the night when he wins his first Oscar, especially on the night where Samuel L. Jackson wins his first Oscar. You know, and this whole thing has overshadowed both of those huge moments in both of those actors' careers. It's really a shame, man. So, you know, again, I get, you know, look, Will Smith should not have done what he did. There's no question about that. But, and again, I'm not going to come down on Chris Rock too hard for making a joke. I'm just not going to do it. I didn't like the joke because I do know a couple of women that suffer from that condition, alopecia, and they have problems with their hair. They have to wear a wig or they have to go bald. And I know that one thing about it, I mean, you think about it from a man's perspective, or at least, well, from a woman's perspective, as far as what they think a man is looking at or observing about them. Obviously, a man is going to observe a woman's curves. I mean, that's just, that's probably the first thing we probably going to look at, most men, especially if you're talking about a black woman. I mean, not to say anything about any other ethnicity or anything like that, but a lot of black women have the, you know, really curves that really just are very distinctive in everything. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, obviously the face and all of that, as far as their physical attributes. But the other thing is their hair, especially a black woman. So, you know, even though, yeah, Jada's been out there and she's kind of embraced her baldness and embrace the fact that she has alopecia and everything, that doesn't mean she's okay with hearing jokes about it. So, I don't know, man. That's just kind of my two cents. I did not like this whole thing from the jump, but let's not act like this whole thing started last Sunday. This has been boiling over within Will Smith, you know, within his heart and everything for a long time. And it just kind of boiled over last Sunday night at the Oscars. Again, that's not an excuse. It's not an excuse, but, you know, I kind of understand it because we are kind of taught, well, maybe not taught, but yeah, we're taught as a man. We have fathers that are in our lives and everything to kind of, you know, that women look to us for protection. Maybe not physical protection or whatever, but just security. Maybe security is the better word. And they want to know that you have their back. And that's what Will Smith was trying to do last week. He just did it in much, much the wrong way. So, again, I understand on his part. But then I'm not going to sit here and come down on Chris Rock. That's kind of my view of it. You know, if both of those guys put out a movie next week, or if Will put out a big time movie next week, and Chris Rock was in the Birmingham area doing a concert, I would go spend money to see both of those brothers. And my stance has not changed on that one bit. So anyway, that's my two cents on what we saw at the Oscars between Chris Rock and Will Smith. And I hope those two are able to resolve this pretty quickly and everything. And I'm hoping that both of their careers are not smeared, especially, of course, Will Smith. I mean, there's no reason for Chris Rock's career to be smeared right now. But I hope that Will Smith is able to continue on with his fantastic career. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to go around the SEC. Like I said, we'll talk some basketball. We'll talk some spring football when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all. We're back, man. Ball About the South with Seawood continues. And we're going to get into, like I was telling you before the break, it is my segment that I call Around the SEC. All right, y'all, we're back. And it's time to go around the SEC. A lot going on in the Southeastern Conference these days, of course. Even with college basketball being over now. Of course, the women's tournament is over as well. We kind of led off the show talking about Dawn Staley and those South Carolina Gamecocks. Again, I definitely want to congratulate them on a job well done there and representing the conference really well and everything. Just really fantastic performance I do want to, before I get into the SEC, while I'm talking about Dawn Staley and kind of talking about women's basketball, I do want to touch on Tamika Reed. She is the head coach of the Jackson State Tigers, and they had, I have not had a chance to talk about them. They had a really good run. I talked about them in one episode after they won the SWAC tournament, but I did not talk about that game that they played against LSU in the first round of the NCAA tournament. That was fantastic, man. And they let it get away from them, though. That's the only unfortunate thing. Had that 10-point lead there with about 4 minutes and something to go in the game, and they let it slip away. But I really, really like what I saw after the game. It's Kim Mulkey, the head coach of LSU. And that game was, of course, played in Baton Rouge. And, they gave LSU everything they wanted, did the Jackson State Tigers. And Kim Mulkey knew it. She went up to Tamika Reed, and they embraced what seemed like 5 minutes. Obviously, it wasn't that long, but Kim Mulkey made comments after the game saying that Jackson State needs to go ahead and pay Tamika Reed, and she never lied. I mean, she did not lie one bit on that. There were some people that kind of took offense to it, thinking maybe she meant, meant it a different way, and I don't know. I think she meant it just how it sounded. And, I want to put that out there. I think that Tamika Reed looks definitely like a really good young coach. She's definitely got the Jackson State Tigers doing their thing. They won 21 games in a row, basically. And at the time, that was the longest winning streak in college basketball, women's college basketball. And, they sit there and they lose that really close game to LSU there in the first round. So, a lot to be proud of. But, yeah, I think Kim Mulkey, the head coach of LSU, is absolutely correct. Jackson State, powers that be, they need to find a way to get a bag to one Tamika Reed. I think she's all the way 100% correct. So, I just wanted to kind of touch on that as well, man. Before I go forward, and while I'm kind of talking a little bit of women's basketball, again, this fantastic season from Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks, and the SWAC from one Tamika Reed and the Jackson State Tigers. Anyway, let's move on to my SEC talk for today, for this episode. And like I said, a lot to get into, man, because we've got some pro days going on, which obviously, Yeah, Alabama Pro Day was last week. LSU Pro Day was earlier today. So last week you had guys like Brian Robinson on display with Alabama. You had guys like Evan Neal, who's still projected to be the first tackle off the board, maybe one of the first four or five guys off the board, period, in the first round. A lot of other guys, of course, that have worn crimson for two or three seasons were on display. John Mechie, of course, he was unable to really work out or anything, but all of those guys you sit there and think about it, that are getting ready to be drafted into the NFL. Jameson Williams, will he be able to land in the first round despite his injury? A lot of dudes, man. There's maybe not as many as we've been accustomed to that are going to be looked at as, the top of the crop or whatever, but still a lot of talent coming out of Tuscaloosa. And then you sit there and you look at LSU, which had their pro day today. Obviously, the one that jumps out off the page is Derek Stingley Jr. And we all know that cornerback, the shutdown corner from the LSU Tigers. He is... was unable to play this past season, basically, but this dude is still going to be one hell of a cornerback in the NFL. I don't think there's any question about that. And you have to sit there and wonder how high he's going to go. I would say at least by the middle of the first round, you would think. Because, at such an important position on the field, you just cannot sit there and pass over or continue to pass over a talent like this dude has, despite the injuries that he has had. I just think, Derek Stingley Jr. may be the best defender in this draft. I think he's unquestionably the best cornerback in this draft. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where he lands in, you know, in the first round. Obviously, he's not going to make it to the second day. So who gets him? So he was, you know, that's going to be a big question, but he was on display today at LSU Pro Day. And it's going to be very interesting. Of course, the other thing that's going on around the SEC right now is spring practice. Of course, now getting back, you know, just talking about the draft, we're going to get into the draft a lot more, basically 3 weeks away from the draft going down. So we'll get a lot closer into some of the prospects, of course, from this conference and the SEC, and look at some of the, you know, some of the teams, especially the teams here in my neck of the woods, here in AFC, NFC South, their needs and, you know, what they're projected to do in the NFL draft. We're getting all of that here in the next couple of weeks. But again, like I said, the other thing going on besides the pro days is spring practice, and we're kind of in the middle of all of that. And LSU has been, obviously, got a lot going on at LSU, trying to figure out who's going to be their quarterback. And that's kind of the theme at several places around the SEC. I think you can say that about Texas A&M, where the quarterback at LSU last season, Johnson, now he is the guy supposedly at A&M, which is, you know, which is kind of crazy. Then, of course, you look beyond that. You go to Auburn. You have the guy that was, they, you know, was possibly going to be the guy at one point at LSU, T.J. Finley. Is he the guy in Auburn? But then again, you know, while right now you would have to say he is the guy in spring practice, could he be overtaken by the guy who was the guy in at Texas A&M last season in Kyle Lozada? I said that wrong. Actually, his name is Calzada. I had to, you know, I kind of had that wrong. I don't know how I did that, but Zach Calzada, he was the guy at Texas A&M. He was the guy that basically quarterbacked the Aggies to that victory over Alabama. So you know, did you get all of that? I hope you're able to get all of that. I mean, seriously, did y'all follow that? I mean, you got Texas A&M's quarterback from last season is in Auburn. LSU's quarterback from two seasons ago, T.J. Finley, or at least their backup quarterback, is in Auburn. Those two are battling it out. You have LSU's quarterback is in College Station with the Aggies, which is Johnson. So, by the way, if you didn't know, he is the son of Brad Johnson, the NFL QB, for so many years with the Minnesota Vikings and everything. So, and that's going to be a battle between he and Haynes King was the quarterback that kind of started out the season as a starter last year for Jimbo Fisher. And he had an injury, and, you know, Calzada was able to take over and everything, and Haynes King was never able to come back and get that spot. So he'll be duking it out with Johnson. I think everyone thinks that Johnson from LSU is going to get that job, and I would probably have to agree with that, but we'll see how that goes. I'm not really sure that that's set in stone. Again, you know, the LSU job, man, that's going to be interesting to see who gets that one. The Auburn job is going to be very interesting as well. So you got a lot of quarterback battles going on around the SEC. I mean, that's just, you know, that's kind of the way it is right now. And I think you look at the teams, for me, I think that are going to be the most stable going forward. Look at Alabama, returning quarterback. Georgia, Stetson Bennett, you assume he's going to be the starter. I mean, I know there was a lot of talk that he may not be, but you would assume that Stetson Bennett's going to get that job back. You look at Levis at Kentucky. He's back. So, you know, it's really, I like those teams that have those returning starters. Oh, KJ Jefferson is another one with Arkansas. So you look at those teams, man, I don't think it's going to be any coincidence that you'll see some of those teams battling for supremacy in the SEC. I don't think there's any question. Obviously, you know Texas A&M is going to be a good football team. They'll figure it out. We'll see about LSU. We'll see about Auburn. I mean, a lot of questions to answer there on the Plains. They've got, obviously, their receiving core was definitely a problem last year. We'll see if they can get some of that ironed out. You got to like what they bring back in the backfield. I mean, obviously Tank Bigsby is a huge, one of the best running backs in the SEC. Jarquez Hunter there, coming off a big time freshman season of his own. So, that Auburn running back, that running back room at Auburn is going to be stacked. We all know that. They just got to find a guy that can throw the football and some guys that can catch it, to go along with. Obviously, the defense is going to be pretty good again as well, you would think. Speaking of running backs, the Alabama Crimson Tide, man, you had Nick Saban. He had a few things to say about the running back room in Tuscaloosa. I'm going to play a clip for you and let you see that exactly what I'm talking about.
Gibbs, what do you like about his game, and what does he add to your offense?
I don't know. Is the microphone on? Or
Jahmyr Gibbs.
What do you like about Jahmyr Gibbs?
Oh, he has really been a very good addition, to our team. He's got great speed. He's really a good receiver, good third down back. He's got great vision. He's got really good burst out of a cut. I'm really, really impressed with what he's been able to do. He's smart. He's picked up things. He's an experienced player. So, he really does a good job of understanding what we're trying to do and how to do it. And that's what experienced players can do. So he's done a really, really good job.
Coach, along with Gibbs, could you comment on the running back group as a whole, and also if you could share anything on how the recoveries are going for McClellan and Roy Dell Williams?
Yeah, they're doing great. They're in black jerseys. They're both practicing non-contact. Jace's a little ahead of Roy Dell because he got hurt a month earlier, but they're both doing fine, and I'm pleased with the running back situation. We've got some experience there, and Jamarian Miller is, shows some promise as a young player. So Trey Sanders is doing good. So that's not an issue on our team at all. So we got lots of good players there, and we'll have plenty of depth when the other guys get back.
Yeah. I mean, if you're an Alabama fan, you've got to be excited hearing those words from Nick Saban. And basically, he named five guys at least in that running back room. Now, you have a couple guys, Jace McClellan and Roy Dell Williams, who were both mentioned in that clip. Both of those guys had injuries. Now, Jace McClellan's a guy that got hurt against Florida towards ACL. And then the same thing, Roy Dell Williams was hurt. He was, injured in the Auburn game. Same thing, ACL. Now, obviously, like Coach Saban said in that clip, Jace McClellan's a lot further along in his rehab than Roy Dell Williams is. But the thought process is that, they're both of those guys are going to be good once we get the season kicked off and everything. He said both of them are wearing black jerseys and everything, which is very, very encouraging news, to say the least. Jace McClellan was a guy that was really counted on early in the season for Alabama. And they lost him basically on, it was a wheel route that he ran. He scored that touchdown against Florida. And that, I think that was the very play that he got injured on, catching that pass and kind of taking it and diving into the corner of the end zone against Florida. That's where he had the injury. So, getting him back, I think it's going to be huge for a guy like Bryce Young. I thought it was, it was McClellan and Brian Robinson, to me, were the two best running backs on the team last season at the time of his injury. McClellan gives Bryce Young that guy that he can count on out of the backfield to, you know, dump it off. Also, he, as I said, he basically ran that wheel route on that play where he got hurt. He was running those kind of type patterns, and I thought he was really a good safety blanket for Bryce Young, especially on third down throws and things of that nature. So you get that element back onto Alabama's offense, and I think the offense becomes a lot better. Then, of course, he mentioned Roydell Williams. He mentioned Jahmyr Gibbs. And he Jahmyr Gibbs is the talk of spring practice for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Every time I'm not even looking for anything Alabama related, let's say on YouTube or whatever, about spring practice, I find it anyway. There are several videos of him just from the spring and saying, you know, the spectacular plays that he's making and how he looks so far on the field and everything. This is the dude that transferred in from Georgia Tech. A lot of people are calling him Joystick Gibbs. He's got moves like that. Having this dude in the backfield is going to be very exciting from the way it sounds. I don't think there's any question about that. And I guess you look at his film and you will see exactly why from his time there at Georgia Tech. The excitement level for Jahmyr Gibbs is at a fever pitch right now in Tuscaloosa. And can't wait for the spring game to go down. But I really can't wait to see what this dude looks like once we get into the real thing in the fall. So you sit there and you look, you know, not really sure that Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be running back one, but you would have to assume that's the case right now. So Jahmyr Gibbs will be running back one. We'll see how it goes. I'm hoping that Jace McClellan will definitely be that guy to kind of be that, you know, the guy to back him up. And then you heard Coach mention Miller, who's a freshman. Maybe he's going to get some run. I mean, he named five guys. Okay, so that's Gibbs, McClellan, Roydell Williams. Also, Trey Sanders is coming back as well. Again, we know about his injuries. Maybe he gets into that second spot. Obviously, when you're in the SEC, you need at least three competent running backs. And Alabama was down to two last season, you know, once you got to the Auburn game and everything. So hearing that, this running back room is stacked four or five deep, and there's still some other guys that are, you know, that are newcomers, that are freshmen and everything. More than likely, they're going to have to redshirt, because there's no way you're going to sit there and carry seven guys. But that is crazy to sit there and think about this team. But it's definitely a breath of fresh air if you're an Alabama fan, because the concern for this offense for last season was the running game. So, and that's, you know, again, the injuries had a lot to do with that. So if you can get those guys in the fold, it's just going to help things along. It's just that simple. So you have that look going. Then you sit there and you look at the receivers. Obviously, you've got some receivers to replace: John Metchie, Jameson Williams, Slade Bolden, all those guys. Not hearing good things about the Jai Hall, you know, had some things out there saying that he was not on the roster and everything. I'm not sure what's up with that. But Alabama has plenty of other guys out there that I think can get the job done. And really the talk so far in spring practice is about this dude, Aaron Anderson. Aaron Anderson, he is a freshman. He wears number 82. And besides Jahmyr Gibbs, I don't think anyone else is getting the oohs and ahs from spring practice any more than those two dudes. This dude, and you sit there and look at him, man. This dude is built. You would not think he's a freshman from where, even though he's a small in stature kind of guy. This is not a Julio Jones type guy that we're talking about here. He's a smallish guy, I guess maybe around 6 foot or whatever, but he's built if you sit there and look at him. And I've seen him make a few moves out there on the football field that are just going to be extremely exciting, to say the least. Then you sit there and you'll get JoJo, guys like JoJo Earl back. obviously, this is a guy that, you know, got hurt there at the end of the season, but he really had a lot of time there in the slot for Alabama. I think his role is going to definitely be increased. And then you talk about Tremaine Burton, the dude coming over from Georgia, dude. Oh, my goodness. Everybody's talking about him in spring practice as well. We got Bryce Young saying really good things about him. This offense is going to rock and roll again in 2022. I don't think there's any question about that. I really don't. And Nick Saban, you know, they had the first scrimmage on Saturday, this past Saturday, and he used the word pleased. And whenever you hear Nick Saban use that word, you kind of got to feel pretty good about everything. But I think the other thing that he said in that press conference following the first scrimmage was that this team kind of gets it. This team has, you know, they have some leaders that have really stepped up. And this team has a different mindset. Well, he didn't say a different mindset, but he said this team has a mindset of a team that knows what it needs to do, and they know how to handle their business, basically. In so many words, I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said, but that is the thing that I'm hearing more than anything, and that's the thing you want to hear. And I think a lot of people kind of really was really kind of thinking that this team did not have the leadership that, you know, from the players that you would like a team to have. I think Will Anderson, the linebacker, all-everything linebacker for Alabama, kind of took some of that on toward the end of the season. I really do. And, of course, he's back this season. Obviously, having a guy like that in your locker room, even if he's not vocal, the example that he sets on the field is going to be really strong. I don't think there's any question about that. So, again, I just think really things are really looking pretty good in Tuscaloosa for the most part. I think this is a pretty healthy team for the most part when you sit there and really look at it compared to what they were at the end of last season. I think that is huge. And I think you're talking about a team that's really deep in most positions. I really do. And then you couple that with an experienced defense. I mean, your Jordan Battles are back. Your Brian Branch, you know, are back. Those are two guys that are going to really hit up that secondary. And then, of course, I just spoke of Will Anderson. And DJ Dale is returning on the front line and everything. So you got a lot of experience coming back on the defensive side of the ball. And I think that's going to help just in case there are some growing pains with the offense, you know, especially throwing the ball. I don't think you're going to see any growing pains with Alabama running the football this fall, even with Bill O'Brien leading the way. And, yes, Bill O'Brien is back, and there are a lot of Alabama fans that wanted Bill O'Brien gone. I'm not one of those dudes. I'm sitting there like this team finished second in the nation, I think, in offensive efficiency. I mean, you know, again, could things have been a little better? Yeah, probably. Could there have been some play calling a little bit better at times, especially in the red zone? Yeah, maybe. But I'm not going to come down on him on that either. This offense did pretty good, and I just got done telling you how. Basically, toward the end of the season, they had two running backs. So I'm not worried about Bill O'Brien at all. I'm not worried about the running game. I think all that's going to be fine. And I think Alabama's going to, like I said, I think they're going to rock and roll offensively and defensively next season. We'll see how that goes. I mean, just kind of looking across other teams in the SEC, of course, the defending national champions are doing their thing. Like I said, man, you know, Stetson Bennett for me should be the quarterback coming in, but, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of people are trying to make that a quarterback race over there in Athens. I don't know why you do that. I think Stetson Bennett's going to end up winning the job, but I'm just telling you what the talk is out there, basically on social media and everything. Then in the East, I think the other team coming up behind them, to me, is Tennessee. I think it comes down between Tennessee and Kentucky. And, you know, Mark Stoops has just done his job there in Kentucky. I think probably on paper, I think Kentucky probably is, you know, I think they really had a really good recruiting class, so they may be a little bit more talented than Tennessee. You just have to like Tennessee offensively. What Josh Heupel was able to do with that bunch last season is they led the SEC in scoring and everything. I mean, you just have to like what you see out of that football team. I don't think there's any question about that. So, you know, Hendon Hooker, the quarterback, he is returning as well. He is another quarterback that is returning. A lot of those quarterbacks are returning, even though there are a lot of quarterback battles going on as well. So we'll see how all that rolls. Again, we're going to keep you up to date most definitely with everything that I can on spring practice. We'll be checking out some of the spring games that will be going down in the next couple of weeks. Alabama and Auburn will be going down, not this Saturday, but next Saturday. Obviously, we're going to talk a lot about those two games and all of the other ones in between as well. Anyway, y'all, I want to take a break. Well, actually, before I take the break, you know, even though, like I said, we've gone around the SEC, baseball is upon us. I mean, MLB is back. And I'm happy to see it, man. You know, we didn't know if there was going to be a season. Of course, the Atlanta Braves are back. We'll talk a lot more Atlanta Braves as the season goes on. We'll talk some Tampa Bay Rays. I think both of those teams are looked at as possible favorites in both of their divisions. I think both of their divisions are going to be stellar. I think you sit there and you look at the Braves. I've seen a lot of moves by teams like the Phillies and the Mets. I think maybe even the Nationals could make a move up a little bit in the standings. So I think the Braves are going to get a challenge there in the National League East. And then in the American League East, you've got the Yankees, you've got the Red Sox, obviously the Blue Jays. All three of those teams, along with the Rays, are going to be hard to beat. So I think both of those divisions are going to be really good and going to come down to the last week of the season. So we're going to talk a lot of baseball as we go forward. But I just wanted to say happy opening day to you guys. I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan. I am happy to see one Albert Pujols back in St. Louis. We have the DH is universal now. The DH is alive in the National League. And Albert Pujols is back where he belongs, in a Cardinals uniform. And I love to see it. Anyway, happy opening day to y'all. I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, we're back. Ball About the South with C. Wood continues here, the 24th episode. And we're going to get into some NFL and NBA. We're going to finish the show out talking to pro sports. And obviously a lot going on in the NFL as we are still right here in the, you know, free agency and everything. Mostly, you know, most of your moves are going to be pretty much over with, but we still have a few players out there that are still out there for the taking. And, of course, there are some moves still to be made. But let's go over some of the moves that have gone on since I joined you last, or, you know, that maybe I really didn't get quite the chance to talk about in recent episodes. Probably, you know, you sit there and you look at it, man. The biggest one, some of the biggest moves have taken place right here within the NFC and AFC South. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. And really no move was any bigger, I don't think, than the Miami Dolphins trading for Tyreek Hill. I mean, I never saw that happening. I never saw that move coming. And I'll tell you what, it really puts a lot of pressure, in my opinion. When you couple the Dolphins getting a guy like Hill, getting the speed, I mean, this dude is one of the fastest guys in the league. We all know that, one of the fastest receivers in the league. For him to basically play on the other side of those formations with Jaylen Waddle, that gives Tua Tagovailoa some heavy weaponry to play with. There's no question about that. And they have also made some improvements on the offensive line. I think they'll probably make some more moves going forward, and probably I'm sure their draft will include some guys that will go on their offensive front as well. So the Dolphins, I think, are doing it the right way. They are giving Tua Tagovailoa the protection that he is going to need to improve his game where it is from where it is right now, and then of course improve the Dolphins' offense at the same time. Now you look at the Dolphins, man; they are basically sitting there as that third team, I guess you would say, probably in the AFC East. Some might would argue that this puts them ahead of the Patriots. That could be. Obviously, the Bills this is their division to lose again. I don't think there's any question about that. But behind them, is it the Dolphins maybe that takes that second spot, or is it still the New England Patriots? It's going to be interesting to find out. Is this the move? Are these moves enough for Tua? I think that's the question. I think that when you look at this thing, you're going to see a lot of pressure on Tua, man. Especially, I think the biggest thing for him is he's going to have to get off to a good start. I think, it's off-season training and all that, and then, of course, going into training camp and then going into the early parts of the season. I think getting off to a good start is going to be optimal for him. And because I just really believe that pressure is going to be mounting on him. The pressure is already mounting on him. He's hearing the chatter on social media and the news, all that. He's hearing it. There's no question about it. Because, you don't get drafted that high and not have expectations come along with it. And it doesn't matter that the rest of the team isn't that good or isn't Super Bowl ready or anything like that. No, fans don't want to hear that. They want to know, look, hey, we drafted you as the second quarterback overall taken in that draft, and we expect you to be further along than you are right now. So this is going to be huge. It's going to be interesting to see how far Tua comes along. And again, I think a lot of people have a lot of questions about Tua. I myself included, man. I'm a huge Alabama fan. I'm a huge Tua fan. I got to watch him, obviously, a lot those two or three seasons he was the quarterback at Alabama. A lot of people don't think he's really adept at throwing that deep ball or whatever, throwing the ball downfield. I definitely disagree with that. I saw him do it at Alabama. The one thing I say, the one gripe that I have about Tua, to me, he's kind of a guy. He kind of has to that kind of gunslinger kind of mentality to a degree. And maybe his arm is maybe not where it needs to be. Then again, when you sit there and you have a hip injury and you're throwing the ball from where he's having to throw the ball, his mechanics and everything, obviously that's going to have an effect on the velocity of his throws, I think. So hopefully as he gets to, gets over that injury a little bit more, hopefully he'll have that velocity back on his passes like we were used to while he was in college. But I think that is the biggest gripe for me. I just, sometimes he did it a couple times at Alabama. He had that kind of mentality sometimes that he thought he could throw the ball through a car wash and the ball not get wet. If that makes any sense. Again, he didn't throw a lot of interceptions at Alabama, okay? But it was kind of the timing of the interceptions. You look at the interception against Clemson and then the championship game. You look at the interception on the first drive of the game in 2019 against LSU. It was the timing of those interceptions. So it's not a big deal, I don't think. But when you're sitting there talking about trying to fit those passes into those tight windows in the NFL, it's just a different it's a different thing, man. Because there were a lot of throws I thought could have been picked off in college. And he was kind of fortunate that they weren't. So, again, this is not sitting there trying to down Tua, man. I really have a lot of faith that he is going to be fine. But, you know, we'll see how that works out. And again, we're going to have to see how this Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill thing works out. Because for me, I think I like to have, I don't mind having one guy, one short guy that has a lot of speed. But I think I'd rather, if I'm going to have a short guy like Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle, I think I would rather have more size opposite of them. That's just me. So having two of those guys, the same, basically the same stature, is going to be interesting to watch despite all the speed that they have. So anyway, the Dolphins are definitely a team that we have to watch going forward. There's no question about that. You sit there, you look at some other moves that are going on. Obviously, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have made a lot of moves here. Well, not a lot of moves. I mean, they made a couple big moves here. As of late, of course, Tom Brady's back in the fold. We know about that one. O.J. Howard is not coming back. He has moved on. They have Leonard Fournette back, which is a huge deal. We knew that would probably would go down, that Fournette would come back. Not really sure about Rob Gronkowski. I'm hearing that he's, kind of weighing everything, see if he wants to come back and all of that. Obviously, I would say that if he does come back, it'll be in Tampa Bay. I would be shocked if it's somewhere else. So we'll see how that goes. They need help at wide receiver, I think, because you sit there and you look at, obviously, there's going to be no AB. I mean, he's gone, obviously. And then you look up, you have a guy like Mike Evans, who's obviously the leader of that bunch, but you look up Godwin. He's a guy that had some injuries last season, was unable to finish the season and everything. They pick up Russell Gage from Atlanta, who's a guy that can, he's a pretty decent receiver from the Falcons who can kind of beat you deep and everything. I think he can be a good complement to Mike Evans. I think that's a pretty good move. But other than that, I think they need some more help for Tom Brady. We'll see how they are across that offensive line and everything. I do think on paper when you sit there and you look at the Buccaneers, you have to kind of say that they're probably the best team besides the Rams in the NFC. But on the flip side, I can see this team taking steps back because you just don't know. I mean, again, Tom Brady looked good at times, for the most part, last season. But, I mean, we're still talking about a dude that's, 40? It's going to be 44 years old. At some point, this thing has to start breaking down for him. So, I'm not sure if it's going to be this season or anything like that. But, we have to sit there and put that thought out there. And, of course, the other big move from the Buccaneers is Bruce Arians is no longer the head coach. He has decided to retire. And he will be moving up into the front office and everything. And that means Todd Bowles takes over as head coach. But first of all, I think it was a really good gesture by Arians to kind of provoke this to happen the way that it did. I think he did some things, obviously, to steer Bowles into that coaching position. The way it looks, it is a little bit a little bit puzzling as to why Byron Leftwich wasn't offered that job or whatever. I have to scratch my head to that one. I'm not really sure. But then again, I think Todd Bowles, you sit there and you look at him. Obviously, he was the former head coach of the New York Jets. He definitely deserves another chance because, I don't know if Vince Lombardi could win with the Jets. Okay, so, Todd Bowles ended up losing his job there in New York and has not been a head coach since. He definitely deserves another shot, like so many other coaches have gotten second shots and third shots and fourth shots after things didn't work out for them in certain NFL franchises or whatever. So he gets another chance. That's going to be interesting to see how that works out. Obviously, this dude's been a really good defensive coach and everything. And so I think the Buccaneers will be fine going forward. I just think they have a few question marks that, I think a lot of people just assume, okay, Tom Brady's coming back. You just pencil them in into the NFC Championship game. I'm not really so sure about that. And again, you sit there and you look at the rest of the AFC South. I mean, there's not a whole lot of competition there as far as, like, I don't think Super Bowl contenders, but I think there are some capable teams in that group. One of those teams is the New Orleans Saints, and they made a huge trade the other day where they gave up a haul and then they received a haul in return, which is going to be interesting to see how that works out. The other big news for the Saints is they were able to bring Jameis Winston back, which is not a surprise at all. No surprise at all. So they have their quarterback. Obviously, there could be some more moves. Maybe they bring in another QB, because the word is that Jameis is back in the fold as the leader of that offense in New Orleans. I think that is the right move for them. I think it's the right move going forward. I don't think there's any question. They'll definitely get Michael Thomas back, which is obviously a huge get for them from last season. So things are starting to set up for the Saints pretty good, I think. Obviously, they were one of the top defenses in the league, and the defense basically carried them to really contending for a playoff spot. I don't think there's any question about that. The offense just kind of came along for the ride. So now you look at this huge trade that took place on the other day. I think it was on Monday with the Eagles. The Saints exchanged their 18th pick, the 18th, the 101st pick, the 237th pick, and a 2023 first round pick and a 2024 second round pick for the Eagles' 16th, 19th, and 194th picks of this draft. So the Saints are kind of piling up for this draft, and I think they're going to really try to bolster things on, I think possibly on the offensive line, possibly defensively as well. I think they're going to, there are several places they can definitely go with a few of these picks. They also could go with a quarterback. And one of the quarterbacks that whichever one is remaining to back up Jameis Winston, which makes a lot of sense, because the word is that Taysom Hill is going to be not going to be a QB anymore. He's going to be basically a tight end or your H-back or your hybrid kind of guy or whatever only. So that's some huge news, I think. So I think this is could be a good move if they're able to figure some things out this season. The only thing about that, you did give up quite a bit for the future, including a first-round pick next year. So we'll see how all that plays out. It's going to be very interesting to see. Obviously, the Saints could be a player still in this division if they're able to get some pieces that can put them over the top. And of course, even if they're able to keep a guy like Jameis Winston healthy, that's going to be the keys for them going forward this season. So a lot going on in the NFC South as you sit there and you look at the Carolina Panthers have been trying to set themselves up as well. Obviously, they're in the quarterback market. We'll see how they play it. Going to be very interesting. And then that brings us to the Atlanta Falcons. And one Matty Ice. And he is leaving Atlanta for, Rich, which is really kind of, I never thought that he would play in another uniform. I thought it would always be with Atlanta. And, of course, now he is moving on. He's basically trading southern divisions. He's going from the NFC South to the AFC South. He is the new quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts. So I kind of killed two birds with one stone, because we talk a lot of AFC South here. We talk a lot of NFC South. So I can kind of intertwine both of those with the talk of Matty Ice going to Indianapolis. What that does for the Falcons is going to be very interesting, to say the least, because this is another team that definitely could be in the market for one of these quarterbacks coming up. Again, this is not the best quarterback draft. So do you, if you're the Falcons, do you do that? I'm not really sure. So that, you may not draft a quarterback right now, which makes the other move that the Falcons made make a lot of sense. And they got Marcus Mariota, who basically is looked at as possibly being just a stopgap between Matt Ryan and the quarterback of the future in Atlanta. I think that's basically how everybody's going to look at this move is going. Marcus Mariota, we know about him. He was a Heisman Trophy winner from Oregon. He went to the Tennessee Titans. Things didn't really quite work out there. He moved on from there. He's been in Oakland. Well, Oakland, of course, slash Las Vegas. And now, and basically he was backing up Carr there. And now he's in Atlanta and looking like he's going to be the starting quarterback unless something else changes between now and training camp and everything. So that's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. Obviously, you sit there and you look at it, this basically looks just like, okay, Marcus Mariota's just keeping the seat warm for the next guy. So we'll see how that works out. It's going to be interesting to see the Falcons and the Carolina Panthers, I think, are kind of, you know, teams that are really trying to find their identity right now. I think that's basically what you're looking at. So I think clearly the NFC South right now, again, there's a lot of wheeling and dealing left to go. We have the draft left to go, but to me, the Buccaneers and the Saints are still head and shoulders above everyone else in the NFC South. So let's flip this thing. Let's flip that Matt Ryan trade over to the AFC South. What does that do for the Indianapolis Colts? Well, obviously, at the first thing that you think about, he's replacing Carson Wentz. And I think the thing that you look at prominently is you look at stability. And that's why you call him Matty Ice. I mean, despite whatever you want to say, you know, Matt Ice is, Matt Ryan is not the best QB. He doesn't have the best arm. He's not the this. He hasn't won the Super Bowl. He hasn't won this. He hasn't done that. He's been kind of erratic here and there and all of that good stuff. You can say, well, all those things could be true about Matt Ryan to a degree. But the one thing that also is true about Matt Ryan is this dude is a cool customer. And that's why we call him Matty Ice. And I think that is exactly what the Colts need. They need someone that's going to give them stability at the quarterback position. And Matt Ryan does that. I mean, you can sit there and kind of question, you know, whether or not he's going to be dynamic enough. You know, I think his arm is okay enough to get the job done, but some people are going to question his arm. Some people are going to question whether or not he's had his, you know, obviously he's had his best days, but does he have enough in the tank to take the Colts to the next level? Which means, you know, division championship, further in the playoffs, or possibly a Super Bowl. All of that is going to be a huge question. Let's just be real about it. But I think at least if nothing else, he gives them stability at the quarterback position that they did not have last season with Carson Wentz, who moves on to Washington. So that's going to be interesting to see. Last season was a little bit of a surprise for me with the Colts. I thought that they could be a possible Super Bowl contender, and things just didn't work out. They got off to the bad start. I think they lost their first two or three games. They kind of got things going there toward the middle of the season. It was kind of looking like, you know, they were going to actually have that battle with the Titans that we thought that they would have, as the Titans lost three or four games in a row there and all of that. It was kind of looking like, okay, maybe the Colts are going to get back in this thing, and then they sit there and lose a couple games that they shouldn't have, and then the cherry on top of the sundae, they lose to Jacksonville in the last game of the season. Basically, that was a win and get in type of deal. Or at least if they had won the game, they, you know, if with a little bit of help, the Colts would have gotten into the playoffs. And they sit there and not only did they lose, they got blown out. They got blown out of Jacksonville on the final day of the regular season. So that is the thing that Matt Ryan is going to be looked upon to bring to that team, stability. And so you sit there and you look at the other pieces. They have receivers. You look at Obviously, at running back, they have one of the best in the game with Jonathan Taylor. Maybe the best, if you know, depending on how you look at it. I would say still Derrick Henry, but, hey, this dude is right there with him. I don't think there's any question about that. And then you have good receivers on the outside as well. They would definitely be a threat. There's no question about it. But I think this whole thing is going to be up to Matty Ice. We'll see how it works out for them. I think you sit there and you look at the Tennessee Titans. I mean, how does this move affect them? I mean, does this push the Colts past the Titans? I think it's possible. Now, you sit there and you look at the Titans. They've made a couple moves themselves. First move that kind of jumps out is they release Julio Jones, which I think maybe a bit of a surprise, just the dynamics of it. But you sit there and you look at the injury problems. He had an injury-riddled season with that hamstring. It makes a lot of sense, obviously, I think, on both ends. So, maybe Julio can find a better place for him to be. And maybe the Titans could find someone to replace Julio on the other side of that formation opposite of A.J. Brown. And they have done just that. They have made a trade with the Rams, and they're able to bring in a guy like Robert Woods. Now, Woods has had his injury issues as well. So we have to see how that goes. But if this dude stays healthy, I think it is definitely an upgrade to have a guy like Woods on the other side of that formation from A.J. Brown. I don't think there's any question about that. So look at that being an upgrade. I think also another move that may kind of get lost in the shuffle is the Titans bringing in Austin Hooper. Austin Hooper's a tight end that had his start with the Atlanta Falcons. And I'll tell you what, he got off to a really quick start. He was looking like one of the better receiving tight ends in the league. He lit it up, man, with Matty Ice. He lit it up his first year or so in the league with Atlanta. Got to Cleveland, and things kind of slowed down for him. Had a couple of injuries there and was not quite the same. But I think the ability's still there. We'll see how it works out. But the Titans really use a guy that can be a little bit more dynamic at the tight end spot. I mean, they lost Jonnu Smith before last season. They had guys like Ferkser and Swain who did okay, but they were not the guys that you look at that can, be dynamic and kind of stretch the field, especially down the middle of the field, those seam routes that the tight ends run or whatever, and kind of loosen things up for your wide receivers and for a guy like Derrick Henry to run. That's, I think, is one of the big things that the Titans could definitely use, and I think Austin Hooper would be a good fit. The Titans definitely had a need at tight end. I would not be surprised to see them add another tight end in the draft as well. So I think that's a really good move for the Titans. So if you ask me right now, and again, there's still a lot of wheeling and dealing to go in free agency, and of course we still have the draft. But right now, today, I would say the Colts probably closed the gap getting a guy like Matt Ryan. But I would still think that the Titans have a little bit of an advantage overall in the AFC South over the Colts. That's just my prognostication. Obviously, you sit there and you look at other teams in the division, the Jaguars and Texans are still, they got a lot going on, obviously. We'll see what they have up their sleeves as we get closer to the draft and everything. And we'll take a closer look at them at that point. But right now, I just think that I will still have the Titans with a slight edge over the Colts in the AFC South if the season began today. You sit there and look at some of the other moves around the league. Amari Cooper moves from Dallas to Cleveland. That's a very interesting move that really pops out. Of course, Deshaun Watson is now the QB in Cleveland, or at least they think he's going to be. We'll have to see how this thing goes with this all this criminal activity around him. Is he going to be available the full season? He could be. I think it's very, very good chance he's going to be suspended for a few games and all of that. So that's going to be interesting to see how that works out. You sit there and you look at the AFC West has really been noisy with everything that's going on there. You sit there, you look at the Raiders and the moves that they've made. You look at the Chargers, who've made some really good moves. You look at the Broncos, who obviously have added Russell Wilson. That division is looking like the division that could have three playoff teams, unquestionably. I mean, who knows? Obviously, all four would never be able to make it. But, I mean, I'll tell you what. If there was a way for four teams to be in the playoffs from one division at one time, this division might be that division this season. You have to like what you've seen there. You sit there and just look at the quarterback position in that league. You know, Russell Wilson, Justin Herbert, Carr at Las Vegas, and then, of course, Mahomes in Kansas City. Just stellar, man. And then you sit there and you look at a team kind of flipping back to the NFC, a team like the Rams still making moves, man. I mean, they obviously had to give up Robert Woods because they got Allen Robinson, the wide receiver from Chicago. They pull him in, so they still got that three receiver thing set with Cooper Kupp, OBJ, and now Allen Robinson the third. I mean, that is going to be still a prolific offense. You sit there and you look at them. They add Bobby Wagner in the middle of that defense at middle linebacker. That is going to be crazy. Could that cause some issues going forward? Will they have a lot of people are kind of questioning the pass rush that they're going to have? Will it be as dynamic with a guy like Bobby Wagner as opposed to a guy like Von Miller? Well, I don't know. That's going to be interesting to see. But I tell you what, bringing in a guy. You sit there and you bring in a guy like Bobby Wagner. That's a pretty good thing to me. But I do understand where some people are coming from because they do lose the pass rusher of Von Miller, which he ends up in Buffalo to kind of really help out that defense. That defense is going to be crazy this coming season. So many moves, man, that are going on around the NFL, and we're still 3 weeks out from the draft. Crazy. It really is. So that's kind of my talk on the NFL today. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to get into a little bit of the NBA when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all. We're going to end the show with some NBA talk as we get a lot closer to the NBA playoffs beginning here. And we're sitting here about a week and a half or so away from the NBA playoffs beginning. Of course, the play-in tournament will begin next week as the last day of the regular season is this coming Sunday. Obviously, a lot going on in the association. There's a lot going on. Obviously, we focus in on the teams down in this part of the world, the Atlanta Hawks, who are really starting to hit their stride now. We'll see if they can continue that, but they have hit a nice little stride, including a huge win this past weekend over the Brooklyn Nets. And that win really gave them a little bit of separation from the Nets as far as the Hawks and Nets are concerned for the play-in. Both of those teams are going to be in the play-in tournament, but I think it'll be a good chance that the Hawks will be able to host one of those games possibly now. Or if nothing else, they could finish seventh or eighth, where obviously with that going on, they would basically get two chances to get into the playoffs. If they lost the first game, then they could come back and play a second game to try to get into the playoffs. So obviously that's pretty huge. So you sit there and look at Brooklyn, and a lot of people are really starting to, you know, talk about them. Of course, being the news is out now that Ben Simmons is not going to play the rest of the season, and which is, of course, just the next two or three games. And then he will not play in the play-in tournament as well. I'm not really sure why they just didn't go ahead and say, you know what, Ben Simmons is not going to play the rest of the season, period. This dude is not playing in the playoffs. I can't see it. I just really can't. You know, this injury and everything else that's going on with him, I just cannot see him being ready to say, okay, you know what, his first action of the season is going to be in the middle of the playoffs. The first action he's ever had with this Brooklyn team is going to be in the middle of the playoffs. First of all, it's not set in stone that Brooklyn's going to be in the playoffs. I mean, that's first of all. So, I don't know, man. I'm just not really. I mean, at this point, the Brooklyn would have to win two games to get into the playoffs. The way it stands. Unless I'm mistaken, but I believe I'm pretty right about that. If they finish ninth or tenth, then they would have to win their first game, and then they'd have to win a second game against the loser of the teams that finished 7 or 8. Now, there's still a chance that they could get to 8, I think. I don't think there's a chance that they can get to 7. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But, I mean, regardless, I think there's a chance that the Brooklyn Nets won't even be in the playoffs. So, you know, again, this Ben Simmons thing, you know, is just beyond ridiculous right now. I just cannot see him just coming back in the middle of the playoffs to play for a team that he has not played a second for. Doesn't make any sense. So we'll see how all that works out. We'll see how the Hawks can handle this thing. Of course, the Hornets will be in that play-in as well. And then, of course, on the other end, look at the Western Conference. The New Orleans Pelicans are in good shape to be in the play-in tournament as well. And I think they have a shot to actually make it into the playoffs. I just really do. I really do think they will have a shot. You look at the other teams that are going to be in that play-in from the West. It's going to be the Timberwolves. It's going to be the Clippers, which could be interesting because they could get Norman Powell back. They got Paul George back last week. Getting Norman Powell back would be huge. And then I'm hearing rumblings that if they're able to get into the playoffs, there's a possibility that Kawhi Leonard could be ready to play a few games in the playoffs if the Clippers do make it. That would be insane. I'm telling you. And it would make them... Again, I can't see Kawhi coming back and being that effective necessarily, but you get some of those guys back. You know, besides Phoenix, I think there are some vulnerable teams in the Western Conference. I'm not saying the Clippers will win those series against a Memphis or a Golden State or whoever, but I think they could put a little bit of a scare into them, though. I really do. So we'll have to see how all that works out, man. As the playoffs are definitely upon us, the Miami Heat. Again, they're still, I mean, I had them as my favorite to win the East before the season. They've had some issues there. You had the skirmish between Jimmy Butler and Udonis Haslam on the sideline. And then, of course, Coach Spo. He had to intervene in that, and then it became a Coach Spo and Jimmy Butler kind of thing. Seems like they've kind of moved on from that as they have really started to hit their stride. I think they won 3 in a row after I think they lost 4 or 5 in a row, so maybe things are starting to straighten out there with the Heat. We'll see how that goes. I still think the Heat are going to be very dangerous along with, of course, Milwaukee in the East, man. So, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. We'll definitely talk a lot more about those teams that are going to be in the playoffs and how deep a run I think they can make here in the next couple of episodes. We'll definitely do a lot of NBA. We'll probably, the next few shows will prominently be NBA talk. I don't think there's any question about that. So, those are some of the teams that are going to be in the play-in and in the playoffs. Now, this is going to be a little bit off topic. The geography is not going to mesh. We talk about the South here, but we're going to have to go out to one team in particular that is not going to be in the playoffs, and that is the Los Angeles Lakers. And we've talked about them. I've talked about them a couple times on this show. And we'll see if this is the last time that we talk about them this season. I think it will be because there's nothing else that we're going to see them do in this season. The L.A. Lakers, with their loss last night to Phoenix, have bowed out of not only the playoffs, but they are not going to be in the play-in as well. San Antonio won their game last night against Denver and effectively eliminated the Lakers from the play-in tournament, which is I mean, I don't know where to begin. Man. I had my rant about them a couple of weeks ago, and I'm probably going to have another rant about them again. And it's not necessarily just them. It's kind of a lot of, you know, the fans and some of the media and everything. And mainly I'm kind of pointing it at people that really just continue to give LeBron James excuse after excuse after excuse. Now, don't get me wrong. LeBron is having a fantastic season. He had a fantastic season because, you know, I don't see why he would play in another game. I mean, he sat there and didn't play last night in a game, obviously, that they had to have. Yeah, he did not play in that game. But, you know, this whole thing, man, this is a lot his fault. I mean, it's not all his fault. And a lot of people that just continue to run around here and just act like he has nothing to do with it. And in some cases, if you ask me, he's kind of had the same attitude. But I don't think there's any question that, you know, the Russell Westbrook move does not get done without LeBron James. I think this was all him, or at least mostly him. I think the move to get DeMar DeRozan, while I'm not so sure that one would have worked out a whole lot better for this basketball team. Obviously, it would have been better, I think. But, you know, you sit there and you look at DeMar DeRozan coming in, and he's averaging 30 points a game or close to it for the Bulls right now. And he's has people putting him in MVP consideration and all that. Obviously, if he had come to the Lakers, he's not having that type of season. Okay, that's first of all. A lot of people are just kind of assuming that DeMar DeRozan would have been the answer and he would have been, you know, everything would have been okay. I'm not so sure about that. I'm not one that is in agreement with that notion. But obviously, I think, and this is not a slight against Russell Westbrook. I think a lot of people are coming down on Russ big time. And don't get me wrong, he deserves his responsibility in some of this as well. Don't get me wrong with that. But this is not his fault. And, you know, he's just not a good fit, man. I mean, LeBron, we've seen it all the years. And when he's been successful, he's had guys that can shoot the ball from the perimeter. He's had shooters around him. He does not have that. That's the first thing that's wrong with this basketball team. And then you sit there, you look up. A lot of these guys are not really good defenders. They're just not. Okay, I mean, they just aren't. And so I think, you know, you're kind of fighting a losing battle. You don't have the shooters around LeBron. You don't have the guys that can kind of defend on the perimeter, because defending on the perimeter became a lot more important since AD had his injuries and everything. So, I don't know. I'm just tired of everyone giving LeBron and giving AD and giving everybody this pass or this excuse as to why the Lakers faltered so bad. I mean, we're talking about one of the biggest disappointments and maybe in sports history. Forget the NBA. This is the team that a lot of people had penciled in for the NBA Finals. The two teams favored before coming into the season were the Brooklyn Nets and the LA Lakers. And this team is not going to make the play-in. The Nets have a bit of an excuse. And they're probably going to make the play-in anyway. And they may make the playoffs. At least the Nets have a little bit more of an excuse. Kevin Durant missed, 30-something games or whatever it was, 40 games. And I realize AD did the same thing. But I just really believe you still had two guys that should have been able to get the job done. The problem was the rest of this basketball team. It just was not that good. And the reason they were not that good is because they wasted a lot of money getting Russell Westbrook, and they had no money, they had no assets to try to acquire players that were a better fit with LeBron and AD. That's the issue with this basketball team. And then that kind of set in with this team, and they figured it out. They knew it. They knew it was a losing battle. And that's why you've seen this team go 4-17 in their last 21 games, because they threw in the towel, because they knew it was over with. So that's, but it starts all the way back before this season, back into the offseason of last season, you know, letting a guy like Caruso go, letting the other guys go in that trade to Washington, and getting that huge contract with Russell Westbrook. That's where that's the origin of this season for the LA Lakers, not the injuries like AD is trying to tell you that it is. And to a certain degree, LeBron's kind of come with the same thing as well. And I'm going to tell you another thing. Magic Johnson is, you know, I love Magic Johnson. Again, I did the show a couple weeks ago with my Ja Amazing show, and I gave you my top five players my favorite top five players, and I talked about, could there be another guy that's in this current crop of players that could enter my top five? I kind of talked about that. And I told you guys that Magic Johnson is either my second or third favorite player of all time, along with Kobe Bryant. Behind the Dream, of course, who's my favorite. But I put that out there, and so I have a lot of respect for Magic Johnson, the player. I have less respect for the guy that's been kind of the front office guy. And now they have, you know, he's basically saying basically what he wants to say on First Take or The Jump and all that. And I know he's not necessarily connected to the Lakers right now officially, but he's forever going to be a Laker. I mean, everything he says is influential. I just don't think it's a good look to have him talking about the Lakers so much on ESPN and everything. I just really don't. And so now you sit there and you look at the future of this basketball team, this franchise. I mean, it's not a good look. And it kind of gets back to what I said when they acquired LeBron James back in 2019. I just didn't think it was the best move. Because once you do that, once you acquire with LeBron James, it's everything else that you acquire with him. Yes, you acquire one of the best players we've ever seen do it. There's no question about it. And what he's doing at 37, 38 years old, whatever he is, it's absolutely incredible. Do not get me wrong in what I'm saying here. But the other thing that you get is a guy that basically what he says goes. And I think he wanted Russell Westbrook on that team, and the Lakers are paying for it right now. And now they're going to be paying for it with their future. So you sit there and you look at it. They won one title, which is great, but the other three seasons have been mediocre at best. Two seasons not making the playoffs, and then the other season they were ousted in the first round. For a team like the Cleveland Cavaliers, winning one title in a situation like that is fantastic. They love it. For a franchise like the Raptors, who did something similar, getting a guy like Kawhi Leonard, basically renting him for one season and winning a title, is fantastic. But when you're sitting there, you're the Lakers, and you have 16 banners already in your building before the one you got in the bubble. If I was a Laker fan, it wouldn't fly with me. That's just my opinion. Anyway, man, I'm going to get out of here. Let's all go. I really appreciate you listening into the show again. I really do appreciate it, and I hope that you join me again next week. Again, my name is Kerry Wood, C. Wood on Sports on Twitter and IG. Come holler at me there. Like, subscribe, do all those things for the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. Until next time, man, y'all chill out. Y'all be good. I'll holler at y'all next week. Peace.